Perfect. I have a move to open it up to the group. So did you want to start, Lar? Or?
I want to respond to Anders. I think, yes, it's important we reflect upon our own activity in a critical way. But let me present a picture of what you presented, the Design and Innovation Program in Denmark, of which I'm quite familiar. I was there for a couple of semesters. I think very highly of it still, comparable to RPI's program, Dean Newsman's operation. Very few examples of it, and I've always been a promoter of design. But your comments got me thinking, and I can see how it was possible, how it is possible, how indeed these graduates of that program go off and find what they've been taught in a way doesn't work in practice, or there are these barriers to holistic engineering, if you like, or real collaboration, and that it's more still cooperation. Well, let me put it this way. Maybe it reflects this tension between, at least our concern, between learning for its own sake and learning for that first job, education for its own sake, learning for its first job. And I would classify the Design and Innovation Program as just as first job oriented, maybe, as the programs in innovation here that are springing up all over the place. And so my response is, yes, okay. I think we should do that. We should say this is what's going on in engineering, and this is how important innovation is in design. I'm still a firm designer. But I think we should rise above that and say, look what Anders discovered, and have our students study that. You know, so this meta level in a core course in liberal studies, while they're doing the design, say, somewhere else in another part of the program. I don't see it as a tension that it's either or between education for its own sake, focusing on the individual development, and tension between that and professional development for the first job. I see that it's not incompatible. I think what we want is students to be able to reflect on that practice, that education for practice.
Well, I very much agree. I'm not trying to debunk. I think it's design and innovation, the education is very important and it is very fruitful. But what I want to point to is a general problem. How progressive education is met in the real world. I think that we have to cope with that. I think that we ought to, on a strategic and also maybe a tactic level, to deal with that, because what we are facing is actually we are exposed as idealists, as scholars thinking about education for its own. I don't like the term education for its own sake. Mm-hmm. I mean, what we're trying to do is serious stuff here. Mm-hmm. We're trying to change the world. I mean, that should be the ambition. And we shouldn't just say that, well, we want to develop knowledge for its own sake. No, it's because of something. We want to use it for something. And I think we should stick to that and be more we shouldn't be that defensive about it. We should actually take up the challenge saying that, well, some of our students have problems. Okay, how can we deal with that? How can we actually improve our education? And I think in that relation, we ought to think about, in German it's called Doppelqualifizierung, this old Frankfurter School concept of actually developing education for utopian means, but at the same time actually trying to realize it in the real world. So I think we have to actually span this tension.
And I think, you know, just building off of that, what I was thinking about when you were talking is that we need to more explicitly engage with the idea of training students for a double consciousness, right? In a sense, like, our programs are set up as a critique of engineering as it currently exists. We need to discuss and explore sort of the immersion of our own programs and how they're different from engineering as it's practiced, particularly at those lower levels, to enable the students to be able to negotiate or code switch in those different contexts, acting as if engineering has been transformed is inaccurate. But if the students have a double consciousness or a code switching ability, so this critical engagement with the history and contemporary practice of engineering alongside research innovation, and innovation that might be one path for it. Are there other people on the panel who want to talk?
Yeah, so I agree with your thought that you don't like the term education for its own sake. And I think part of the danger with that one is that we fall into either two slots or rails, one being either use it to do something or else I consume it. And we're a consumer culture. And I think maybe one of the a third way to think about it is that not only do we educate to change the world, but so that we're changed, that people are the world. It's not that we're the agents and we're going to change something out there, but it's actually transformative. And I think we sometimes lose sight of that because we can confuse transformation with consumption of information, mm-hmm. something like that.
Great. And Joe?
One of the antidotes to the problem you're pointing to is internships. And many of our engineering students fight to get internships. So they get out into the real world early before they've graduated. They get to see what it is to work in a company. And they come back and they really push their professors. You're telling me this, that, and the other, but I just got back from, 4 months over the summer and none of what you've taught me is of value when it comes to actually working. So there's something, at least, that can be put in place. Make sure those students get out and get some exposure.
Great. So I think there was a question here and then there.
So I have about 50 comments to make, which I won't do. But I think
because things are still being recorded again, so we want
people
to say
their
names.
Terry Bristol, Portland State University. So in the spirit of the radical suggestion from the Purdue guys that piecemeal stuff ain't going to work, and I think in support of Larry's overall thing here, I want to there's some stuff about one is Anderson's reference to Dewey, I think, is extremely important. There is a philosophy of engineering out, and it's called American pragmatism, and it's been there for a long time. It's been suppressed by various reasons, but it's there. I went to an engineering conference, presented this thing, said, is pragmatism the missing philosophy of engineering? And all the guys are listening go like, duh. So there's a lot there, and there's a lot in Dewey about all these issues. So it's pretty interesting. The other one is another thing what Brad and I talked about before, which I didn't realize, is that Larry's a Wittgensteinian. I should have known that. Wittgenstein is a crucial guy in the whole philosophy. So you want to get the philosophy departments involved. They're all into Wittgenstein and stuff. But this has to do with object worlds and communication and all that sort of stuff. Very, very important stuff. But that came up as a response to the dominant philosophy of science that was out there. Okay, so my last thing is that there's a guy, one of the pragmatists, a guy named Josiah Royce. This is where I got it from. And I have a thing called Royce's Criterion of Self-Referential Coherence. What that means is, where is the scientist in the scientist world? Okay, if the science world, I mean, that's a Brian Greene. Yeah, it's all deterministic laws. So what Royce says is, wait a minute. So like, he says that any theory you have must be able to account for itself, must be able to make sense of itself. So, wait a minute. So you got to say your theory of the world has to have physicists in it, and it has to have physicists that learned, came from a point of ignorance to period of learning. Well, so that means there has to be learning in the world. And anyway, so Roy says, any theory that you have that doesn't have problem solving in your view of the world is not going to be self-referentially coherent, okay? If you don't have an idea of learning as part of the nature of the universe, then that doesn't work. So the self-referential coherence thing is important. So basically what it's saying is, the way to put this is that science actually is part of the liberal arts, always has been. We used to joke in philosophy of science that science is this sort of bastard child that got cut loose somehow to imagine that it was talking about this deterministic, you know, this world. So I think the move is to say, actually, the sciences, I was talking to Dan on the way in, and say we haven't talked enough about the relationship between science and engineering. And the idea is that basically we need to attack science, you know, or not attack it, but I mean basically reclaim it and say, what is science? And Petrosky does this in his great book called The Essential Engineer, and he says, everything you thought was science is actually engineering. It's a really, really good argument. It's very well presented, and I think that should be part of all these courses. I want to make one last comment about what's happening in academia and what's happening in business. And so, role models. So you probably all heard about Bill Gates and Bill Gates Foundation. You ever heard the phrase that they have about wanting to, everyone to lead a healthy and productive life? That's the goal of the Gates Foundation. Where did that come from? Background, I was looking at the, for unrelated, semi-related thing, the website which you can look at for the Space Needle in Seattle. And they have a little anecdote in there. And it says, young Bill Gates was had won a lunch to the Space Needle from his pastor. Excuse me. In his past, what he had done, the contest was to recite the Sermon on the Mount, word for word. And he did it. So Bill Gates is a role model engineer. Okay, and I think that should be one of the guys in there. The other one that you could look at is Steve Jobs. He's a fabulous talk. It's one of these commencement talks he did, and about, you know, who he is and what he is and how he did stuff. And so I think those are two that would be really good in these courses. But the main thing is Larry's radical thing. Reclaim the whole thing. Liberal arts is the bigger tent. Mm-hmm. And the idea that science is outside that is just not credible. Okay, so.
I'd like actually to respond to that. I can only speak for myself, but I never thought science was outside the liberal arts tent. In fact, one of the things I try to do with our freshmen is to help them see the difference between the sort of the practical arts and the liberal arts. And again, you know, not with a hierarchy attached to them, but just with a very clear-headed sense of what the differences are. And, you know, and to remind them that if we all spoke German, right, you know, I would get to be a scientist too. But it's just because we speak English, right, that I don't get to be a scientist. And for most of them, unless they're from a Northern European country to begin with, you know, are surprised by that. And then the last thing I just wanted to say about Mr. Gates is that there's a Mrs. Gates now. And, you know, I don't read too much about him because I tend to find him a little bit annoying. But to the extent that I have read about sort of his life trajectory, the philanthropic work emerged in spades after there was a Mrs. Gates. And I think that's a really good example of social context. Oh, no, of course. Yeah. I mean, presumably people don't just pick wives by accident. Right, but I just think it's a good example of how those relationships change people.
Perfect.